Welcome back to Behind the Panels, Issue 14, the comic book podcast that is starting to worry there's another 51 of us out there on parallel Earths. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray. David, how are you?
Your other host, David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
I'm incredibly well for this pleasantries exchange that we
The pleasantries exchange. Yes, I noticed that in the show notes again. Hey, I got to tell you something, though, and this is actually kind of a what we've been watching, what we've been reading thing, but I just got to tell you that, and I know you're probably going to slap me for this, but I'm kind of digging the new Green Arrow.
Well, great
flaming arrow.
But I knew that would kind of have something good.
You know, actually, I'm thinking they've been doing this deliberately, because the more I think about it, the more I think that this is going to be the basis of, and this is going to be a story that we've got coming up later on, this is going to be the basis of the the new TV series that they're coming up as well. And I've got a bit of a theory about that, but I'll just tell the folks what they've got in store for them this issue. On this week's Behind the Panels, we've got, we talk about, of course, the DC's Watchmen prequels. There's a new comic that was announced from the creators of the Joker, but I suspect this is actually part of the DC Watchmen prequels. Batman has owls in his belfry, and apparently Marvel's teasing Spider-Men.
That one I don't dig at this point, so we'll find out more about that coming up.
Plus, we'll also talk about some X-Men sequel updates and a few other bits of Green Arrow, of course, a bit of Mother Movie news, and our kick-ass pick of the week this week is Punisher. Welcome back, Frank. But so, first, I think I'll throw in our vintage clip.
Oh, please do.
Because this one's a doozy.
You know, with your flair for entrances, you should consider a career in the theatre.
I'll think about it. What are you doing here?
What would I be doing tramping around the sewers of this great metropolis?
Sightseeing.
Very funny. I bring you news, you give me grief. You know they all think you're dead.
They'll kill each other now. Turn the lights off when you leave.
Very clever. And what will you do while the carnage ensues?
Take a vacation.
Yes, I hear the sewers of Paris are lovely this time of year. And what about the children?
What children?
The children of the new bosses are now counted among their losses. They're being held for ransom by the Japanese.
So the bosses will have to pay up.
Pay they will, and all for naught. The children will be sold by the slave trade if they are bought. My God, man, don't you see? This is a result of your five-year killing spree. You weakened the fathers to such degrees they couldn't protect their own families.
I punish the guilty.
Damn straight he does.
Now, I'd forgotten this is the 1980s Punisher movie. I'd forgotten that Barry Otto's character spoke entirely in rhyming couplets.
Yeah, and I love
except
the
when he mentions the Japanese. He just doesn't bother rhyming that one.
I love that when he says underneath this fair metropolis, and my mind immediately goes, what, Sydney?
Exactly. A lot of people forget that was shot in Australia back when Marvel were doing really, really high quality stuff like Punisher.
Another one of Marvel's wonderful, wonderful licensing deals, because they were broke and they were trying to make movies and they couldn't do it. And a lot of people don't realize that New World Cinema, who actually produced that, is actually Roger Corman, was Roger Corman's company. So it was like, it was a real cheap and nasty, and it didn't hit cinemas. It was
He's got a lot to answer for.
Yeah, he does, because he was also responsible for that horrendous, never released Fantastic Four that was made, which was just awful. Which you can find around bootlegged all over the place, but it was never officially released. I think they should release that.
Absolutely. I think it'd be just a bit of fun for fans, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Just put it out, make it a budget DVD, you know, and we could all have a bit of a giggle. But I bet you it would sell like hotcakes.
Certainly would. Now, David, you mentioned before that clip that you've been digging Green Arrow.
I have. I've just read issue 6 of Green Arrow, and I kind of really enjoyed it, and I think it's a lot of this has got to do with the fact that I'm not the Green Arrow fan that you are, and that's to be fair. I don't like his new design. You know, with he's very just become very generic superhero-ish in his you know, armor plates and all this sort of stuff. And I kind of like the old Robin Hood look to him.
Yeah.
But there's some really nice character moments in issue 6, and once again, we're now starting to pull. We're starting to see, as issue 5 and 6 and 7s are rolling around, we're starting to see the new DCU pulling together.
Yes.
It was all these disparate timelines and issues, and we never really knew where anybody fit in. And there's actually a line in, minor spoiler, but there's a line in the new Green Arrow where the bad guy actually says, "You're just like all those other superheroes." And that just gets thrown away. And then at the very end of the issue, Green Arrow's sitting there, and he actually has a beer in his utility belt. You got to dig a hero who does that. Right?
Yeah.
Pulls his beer out, takes a swig, and then just suddenly stops himself and just goes, "There are other superheroes?"
Yeah.
And you go, aha, we're now starting to see a timeline here, because this means it would fall into the same timeline as Justice League.
Yeah, and they're actually, no, he is actually, there is an issue coming up of Justice League where he's on the cover and he's petitioning to join the Justice League, and Aquaman doesn't want him to join.
Of all the people who could say
that. Yeah, I know, exactly. So that's, you know, I'm liking that. Look, I've been reading a bit as well. I've actually made it a point, because I'm a masochist, of reading all the series that have been cancelled.
Oh, good for you. I've done a few of them.
And I can see why they're all being cancelled.
Yeah, I said this 4 weeks ago. I actually did go and catch up on OMAC.
Yeah,
and it doesn't get any better as the issues go on.
OMAC doesn't. Men of War doesn't. I'm actually there's a couple that I really didn't enjoy. Mr. Terrific is does not live up to its title.
No, and it's almost vaguely embarrassing.
This is the thing. Some of them are really bad. There's actually this thing, and I was chuckling to myself over it before. There's this real thing in the bad comics. You know, it's a bad comic when you get almost every issue them explaining the whole concept again.
Yeah.
Or in issue one, the one thing I will give props to the new series of Green Arrow, it's just kind of thrown you into this world.
Mm.
And I suspect it's actually building up, and it's going to give you a reason why everything's different later on.
Hmm.
But it's just kind of thrown you in this world and not sort of gone, well, it's because the reason that I'm like this is because 7 years ago I was bitten by a radioactive hedgehog and turned into the man you know today. And it's like, you get these lines where people are actually giving you their origin stories in, like, you know, mile-long speech bubbles, just in casual conversation. Well, you and I both know that I'm susceptible to wheat. Like, yes, so why are you telling me that?
I think we have the backstory to Megaduck here. Can I just say that?
Yeah. Mega Duck versus Giant Prawn, I believe.
Exactly. Exactly. Story. I think we may have it now.
David, I think before we descend into madness, maybe we should move on to some comic news.
Let's do that.
What a scoop!
All right, Richard, what's the news?
Look, nothing's happened this week at all.
All right,
David.
Let's move on.
Oh, no, hang on, wait. Here's a couple of stories. DC confirms Before Watchmen prequel series. Oh,
I read this. This is such a bad idea in almost every way.
What was that?
I said, this is such a bad idea in almost every way.
Yeah, well, look, you know, I'm sort of in two minds about this. The retailers are loving it. Because, you know, it's going to be the biggest selling titles of the year.
Of course. And they're going to be able to use that new little DC Watchmen logo that they've already created.
Exactly.
And I will say, look, just to jump the gun a little bit here, I will say that there's actually three, maybe four of these titles that actually interest me, purely because I like the writers.
You know, and I agree with you. First of all, to get back to the cost issue, it'll cost you $139, I think, to buy these as individual issues in US dollars if you want to get all of them, which is, as one site pointed out, is pretty rich considering that you can buy the Watchmen trade paperback for $12.95 on Amazon.
Yeah, hang on. What's the individual issue cost are we talking about here?
Well, we're talking, they're all standard issue prices. They're all, $3 something each.
Well, you just wait for a year and then they'll release the whole thing as one big trade paperback.
Exactly right. But, I mean, people aren't going to do that. This is Before Watchmen. And you're talking about the talent here.
Hmm.
You are talking about Brian Azzarello and Lee Bermejo are doing the Rorschach miniseries. These are the guys who did Joker.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting. Because I think if they they do their take on him the same way that they did to Joker, that's actually a worthwhile book reading.
As is the Comedian book, which is once again written by Brian Azzarello. Different artist, though.
J.G. Jones is doing that one.
Yeah, so those two books I'm interested in because I like Azzarello's writing. And you know I'm a fan of J. Michael Straczynski.
Didn't he retire from comics?
He seems to be very busy if he did, because he seems to be everywhere at the moment. But he's got two. He's doing the Dr. Manhattan and the Night Owl.
Well, I quite like Darwin Cook stuff. So Minutemen and Ozymandias will interest me on that level. Minutemen and Silk Spectre. Mm. And Amanda Connor's art has always been fantastic. I think you liked her stuff on Power Girl.
Oh, she's the Power Girl one I like. Yes. I love her.
Yeah, so she'll be interesting.
Her redoing of Silk Spectre could be interesting.
Yeah. So, look, you know, I'm in 2 months about this, David, because I think on one level we have to stop being precious about Watchmen. It is a terrific graphic novel that was written 25 years ago.
Yeah.
But every other comic book character has had so many different people take on them. Some are good, some of them bad. You know, I'm surprised that DC haven't capitalized on this before.
Do you know what it is, though, for me? It's not that I'm precious about Watchmen. I just don't see a reason for it. Because Watchmen is such a self-contained book that you sit there and look at it and go, I don't need prequels. I don't need to know what happened before or after Watchmen. You know what I mean? It's like, this is self-contained perfection.
My other mind, yeah.
Yeah, and you just sit there and go, I don't need to know where Rorschach came from. Any information I needed about his background or any of their backgrounds, I'm told in the book anyway.
Yeah.
That is relevant to the book. And I equate this to Kingdom Come. I've been reading The Kingdom, the sequel.
Yeah.
And I really don't like it. And I'm sitting there, and I'm sitting there going, okay, I'm trying. But all the way through it, the nagging thing that just keeps coming back to me is that Kingdom Come is so self-contained that you don't need any more to this.
No, I that's the other thing that I absolutely agree with you on that level, is that while I actually, in principle, don't mind seeing more of these characters, mainly because I really want to see these artists do their take on them. Because if you are going to do it, these are the people you do it with. I mean, also, we haven't mentioned that the other artists are Adam Hughes and Andy and Joe Kubert and Jay Lee, who's been doing great waves.
They've pulled out the A-team to do
None of these people, though, are known for their speed, so I think it's interesting that they haven't actually given a firm start date for Watchmen.
Well, I'm also wondering how long it's been in the works, because we've already got that logo created. I have this funny feeling that they started this a long time ago, and they're making sure that they have everything in place before they launch it.
Well, interesting side story before we move on to the next story, which is apparently, according to Digital Spy, and I haven't included this link in your show notes, David, I've just found it, but we can certainly include it on the blog. Kevin Smith claims that he turned down the opportunity to write before Watchmen for DC Comics.
Well, it doesn't surprise me, because he's a huge fan of Watchmen.
Mm.
And so I think, I mean, even he was even a huge fan of the film. And you sit there and look at it and go, I can imagine him saying, why?
He actually said, his quote was, talked to Jim and Dan about it 2 years ago, only passed because I'm not Alan Moore, sadly. If I was Alan Moore, I'd be all over it. As Kevin Smith, I'm likely to make Bubastis big pussy jokes and have Rorschach wet himself.
Yeah, pretty much. So, although, that being said, his two Batman miniseries are phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I think he is more capable than he gives himself credit for. But I think at the back of his mind, he's making jokes about it, because at the front of his mind, he's probably going, way. Excuse me, I'll bleep that out.
But, you know, that's right, David. This is not film, actually.
No, that's right. But I am talking about Kevin Smith.
I think we should move on to the clean Marvel universe now.
All right, let's move on to the clean Marvel universe.
Okay, well,
equate Marvel with clean.
Yes, well. Now, Marvel have teased another big event that's coming up in June this year. I know, look, we've already got the Avengers fighting the X-Men. So Spider-Man's feeling a little left out, even though I think he is an Avenger now.
I'm sorry. Another big event?
David, I know it never ends, does it? Well, this time, Spider-Man's got friends.
Of course he does.
Apparently there are going to be Spider-Men.
And how are they? What, did they find the radioactive spider again? How about that?
No one actually knows what this is going to do. There's some people thinking they're either going to do a crossover between the Ultimate Marvel Universe and the Marvel 616 Universe.
No, don't do that. No. Don't do that. That's a bad idea. These two universes.
That's a bad idea. One of the more likely scenarios is that over in Ultimate Spider-Man, Peter Parker got killed off.
Yeah.
They could bring him back from the dead and have two Spider-Men.
No, wait. Oh, well, yeah, okay, you could do that. Yes, you could.
So, there's a third scenario involving neither of those things.
I reckon this is going to be to do with the clones again.
Oh, God, if they're hell-bent on recreating the 90s at the moment, aren't
they? They are. And all I can think at the moment is they're so successful on this reboot that they're doing, this stealth reboot that is slowly seeping into the Marvel Universe, and then they take these giant steps backward with
Ben Reilly turns up again, I'm leaving.
Sorry?
Ben Reilly turns up again, I'm leaving.
Well, I was just reading part of the Future Foundation, which was kind of the reboot of the Fantastic Four, after Blaze died. Blaze, Storm died. Sorry, Johnny Storm died.
It's one of those.
I'm equating my flaming people here. I'm confusing my people on fire. But when Storm died, Spider-Man joined the Fantastic Four, and they renamed themselves the Future Foundation. And that ran for about 25 issues, 28 issues.
It's such a lame name.
It is. It's a really lame name. But the beautiful thing is that that's concluded. Well, it's actually still going, but it's kind of taken a different path because issue 600 was just launched 3 months ago, which was the reboot of the Fantastic Four because,
that's right.
I'm sorry, spoilers, people, they found Johnny Storm and he's still alive.
Yeah, he was behind the couch the whole time.
Yeah, they had to shake the couch out for change and there he was.
You know? It's Johnny Storm.
Lo and behold. Anyway, so he's now shown up and the Fantastic Four have now relaunched, which I'm quite happy for because I always liked Storm and I don't know why you'd want to kill him off. But the point is that
there have been cell issues.
Well, exactly. But the point is that in the Future Foundation, they've been resurrecting and bringing back the whole Galactus story again. And you sit there and go, oh, really? So we're going back there again, are we? You know, it's like I thought we'd kind of wrapped up the whole Galactus thing.
Most of these stories are already available in trade paperback.
Pretty much. Yeah, pretty much. So I don't know. So every time I think these companies, both DC and Marvel alike, I'm not going to just level out Marvel, but every time they seem to be doing something right, they then turn around and just do something where you go, oh, what are you thinking about again? Because I don't recall Fear Itself or Spider Island, the last two major events, actually breaking any records here.
No.
So why do they feel that they have to run an event every 4 days?
Because I just suspect that, you know, they're sitting there rolling around in their giant piles of money, signing anything that comes their way.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Interestingly enough, and this kind of moves us into our next story, which is about the DC executives talking about what they've got coming up. But one of the other stories that's linked to this, and it's actually linked it's sort of a link embedded in the link that we'll put in the show notes, is that DC actually climbed to the top of the ladder again for January.
Oh,
but there's basically no space in it again. It's still, they're both still basically sitting around a third of the market each.
Hmm.
And there's literally 1.5% between them or something.
So they're just playing leapfrog with each other at the moment.
Pretty much.
That's
what all these events do. It's like, you know, okay, well, it's Marvel's got the event in May, so they'll sneak ahead, and then DC will have one in June, so they'll sneak back ahead again, and then so forth. It'll just go like that till the end of the year.
And what frustrates me, though, is then they announce something like the Watchmen prequels, which in itself is an event, which means we have to pay for that on top of whatever DC event they're going to throw at us as well.
Yeah, well, this actually brings me to the next story, which is also taken from Newsarama. And it's about the DC executives. They're basically talking about the January sales, and they also talk a little about Watchmen 2 and Earth 2. And what they say is about their market share. They say that being number one in units indicates to DC that their comics reach more individual people than competitors. But they're also saying that they started talking. What I found really interesting about this article was they said that any future cancellations and additions to the core New 52 ongoing titles will be done the same way they did in the second wave, which was, you know, take away six, add six.
Right.
So they said they'll maximize the lift. And I think what they're wanting to do is that they said they haven't got any current plans to have a third wave. But what was interesting here, there was the quote, chances are there will be another batch cancelled and replaced before the New 52 is a year old.
Of course there will.
The second wave will probably
Yeah, and there's still a few titles in that first wave that are ready to go well. I think there's a few things they missed this time around that can definitely...
Oh, absolutely.
That can definitely come out. So, yeah, look...
Grifter, sorry.
Go for it.
No, Grifter was all I wanted to say there.
Oh, yeah, Grifter.
But, I was coughing at Grifter.
No, Grifter is definitely... And I'm sorry, I actually caught up with it. I'm still not convinced about Blue Beetle.
I'm a Blue Beetle defender, but he's had a rocky history as well. So they also said, this is really interesting, sort of going back to our Before Watchmen story, that they're already planning on how to market the collected edition to the millions of readers who picked up the original Watchmen as a book, not a comic. And Before Watchmen is not just a one-time comics event. It's a plan to, quote, set in place something that is lasting.
Uh-huh. Regular series, perhaps?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Hence the loco.
Yeah.
So
I don't want to see that happen. Can I just tell you that?
No, and I will draw the line too. I think that Watchmen is a self-contained thing. I think it's perfectly fine as a tribute, and if you view this as a tribute for other creators to go and play in that world, particularly when they're creators who have earned their stripes.
Yep.
But when you start then doing an ongoing series, the same way they did with, say, Elektra, then you're actually messing with somebody else's vision.
Yeah, I agree.
You know? So, and I think that's the line I think most fans would probably draw.
What I think is interesting is that, okay, I know Alan Moore's not going to come back. That's definite. We know that. But I am surprised that Dave Gibbons didn't come back for any of these.
Dave Gibbons has given a sort of a tentative blessing. Mm. He said that while... he's kind of quite, and I haven't got the exact quote in front of me. He just says, you know, our original was a self-contained thing. But, you know, it's good to see so much talent involved in this thing. So he's kind of sort of said, look, our comic's awesome and we know it, and it's like it's a self-contained story. But we, you know, I kind of respect these guys that are doing it. I just don't really want to necessarily have anything to do with it myself.
Fair enough.
So, like, I think that's where Alan Moore, of course, is very famously outspoken. He said he'd rather this just didn't happen at all. It's not a question of money for him. He doesn't want it to happen at all.
He doesn't want anything to happen.
No,
like an aging hippie in the woods, you know, planning his next assault while living in his log cabin without electricity.
You know? I think he was the Unabomber. Wasn't
I think he was. He looks like the Unabomber.
No, his beard. I could live in that beard.
By Robin.
I think most of his ideas come from there.
I think so. I think if he shaved his beard and cut his hair, it'd be like the Samson Complex. He'd just be a guy.
It's true. he'd be Rob Liefeld. Anyway, moving on. There was another story here I was going to do, and I won't, because we're running out of time. I'm just going to mention it really quickly. DC are having another mini event as well, which has been building up. It's basically going to be Night of the Owls, and around the 8s and 9s, we're going to start seeing crossovers. Batwing's going to come to Gotham to participate as part of Night of the Owls.
What's he got to do with any of this?
I don't know, but he's a bat person. Basically, it's going to be, I think, Batgirl, Nightwing, Robin. They will all be involved in the Night of the Owl stuff. It's been building up in all the bat books. We've seen it coming. It'll be the first crossover event of the New 52. But sort of ironically, it's kind of the first crossover event involving pretty much the old continuity.
This will also be coming out, if it's issue 8, this will also be coming out about the same time the Batman Incorporated.
Yes, exactly.
We'll be launching. So it kind of builds on all of that.
Yeah, so it'll be part of the second wave, I guess.
Hmm.
The whole Earth 2 thing, I think I've got a theory around some of that, because I know, you know, I'm starting to work out which books are set on Earth 1 and which books are set on Earth 2. And I'll take Green Arrow as an example, because I think Green Arrow might be set on Earth 2.
It's possible. It's possible.
Because Black Canary is just continued. Seemingly in the original continuity. Sorry, not Black Canary, Birds of Prey.
Yeah.
But her character of Black Canary. In the original comics, if people sort of know their Green Arrow history, which I kind of do, Black Canary was originally from Earth 2, and her husband died, and she came to Earth 1 and fell in love with Ollie, and, you know, they became one of the great DC couples.
Yeah.
I think they've done a role reversal here. I think she's now on Earth 1 and he's on Earth 2.
And you think he's going to come to Earth 1?
He's going to come to Earth 1, and I think they'll eventually get back together.
Interesting theory.
That's kind of my theory. But if that doesn't hold, I think that's what they've done. And I think I'm starting to pick which heroes are on Earth 2 and or in a different timeline continuity. Or Earth 2 maybe is set, is 5 years earlier or something.
That's an interesting theory. I'd like to see this play out.
But I'm hoping that they're working on something because we're yet to see the Woman in Red come back.
No, and that's we're talking like issue 8, 9, 10, yeah?
Yeah, exactly right.
So, once again, when they kill off those other books and we start to bring it on, wouldn't you love to be privy to the big board on the wall of DC?
Oh, I want to sneak in there and take a photo on
where
that.
They have this thing mapped out. I think absolutely. It would be fascinating. All right, let's move on to this. All right.
Okay, well, this week on Behind the Panels, the movie news is kind of more TV news again and a little bit of movie news.
That's where it's all happening right now, though.
It is all happening on TV. We're probably going to have a lot of movie news coming up in the next couple of months. You and I, I don't know if you're making it today, but next week I am seeing a very special preview of a superhero movie that's coming out in the summer in the US. I'll be seeing about half an hour of that.
Oh, I haven't been invited to this.
I think, well, you may or may not have been, but I don't know if you'll be free on that night. I'll talk to you about the show about it because it's a bit earlier.
Please do.
So that's coming out. I think everyone knows about this around the world. Spider-Man is doing sneak preview things everywhere. I think it's pretty much they're going to be playing the Comic-Con footage, which was the Lizard stuff. So that's happening next week. And I think over the next few months, we're going to get stacks and stacks and stacks of superhero movie news. Unfortunately, at the moment, most of that is in the form of the latest merchandise and toys and cup toppers at the cinemas and what 3D glasses are going to look like. Can I just say the Avengers 3D glasses, if you find them online, look amazing. So they're all sort of done in the style of the characters. But we're getting all that sort of ephemera at the moment. We're not getting anything really concrete. So again, I think the Super Bowl will have been and gone, I think, by the time the show goes
I'm
out.
I'm assuming so that we'll everybody has seen the 10-second tease.
Yes.
There was a 10-second tease released on the net of the Avengers trailer that will show during the Super Bowl, and even that 10 seconds was friggin' awesome.
It was awesome, and I think we're going to see a lot more of that sort of stuff. Mm. So, I think we'll probably see a lot more of the Superman because let's face it, we've got about three big superhero movies coming out in this US summer. So it's going to be big, and I think we should wait. But for now, television is where it's at, in the words of Beck. And Green Arrow, which we've been following all along, Green Arrow has been cast.
Now, I'm looking at this guy. I think he looks all right.
He kind of looks like the Green Arrow of the New 52.
He does. He does. He could grow the goatee, and then I'd be happier.
Now, the guy's name is Stephen Amell, or Amell, possibly. And I actually looked at him and I thought, yeah, I can see that. And then realized where I knew him from, which is HBO's Hung.
Right, right.
And at the moment, he's kind of playing in the third season, he's introduced as like the rival male prostitute, basically.
Right.
And so he's shirtless a lot in that. And so he's certainly fit.
Okay. And he's also going to be popular with the girls because he's also had arcs on the Vampire Diaries.
That's right. And he's also been in Private Practice, things like that. So look, the way they're doing it, they seem to be also have painted him as a bit of a former bad boy in this thing as well. So it's going to be an interesting direction. I'm still not entirely convinced, but I'm still tentatively optimistic about it.
Yeah, look, I'm going to watch it if it gets released, unlike a couple of the last few pilots that never even surfaced. But I will watch it. I'm very curious. I anything superhero I watch, I'm a glutton for it. I can't help it. I even watched the failed Wonder Woman pilot that was just on recently, which I managed to procure a copy of, which I won't say from where.
David, you've said too much.
I have said too much. But, it was I could actually have seen that series go to series. It wasn't it wasn't good, but it was far better than some stuff on.
That's right. So, and I think there's a good chance, and I think DC got a bit of faith in Green Arrow. They've been sort of boosting his profile the last few years, and fingers crossed for that one.
All right, we'll keep our fingers crossed. And the last one here?
The last story is just a little something from the indie world. There's just to remind you, it's not all capes being adapted to the big screen. The writing duo Rocky Russo and Jeremy Sisenko are adapting Top Shelf Productions' Too Cool to Be Forgotten.
I've never heard of this.
Which is a great title, and it's a bit of a cult book that came out a few years ago. The story, it sounds great. It's a guy who goes into hypnosis to break his smoking habit of 25 years. And even though apparently, according to the article, he mocks the session as mumbo jumbo, he is suddenly transformed into his 15-year-old self back in 1985. But with his 40-something mind still intact. So this sounds like, you know, perfect fodder for us lovers of all things 80s.
Oh, I've got to look for this. I've actually never heard of this.
No, nor had I, actually, but I think this might be one that we might have to do coming up.
We might have to look into this. Leave it with me. I will look into this.
Excellent, David.
I think this actually sounds like it could be a lot of fun.
And the cover is basically a pack of cigarettes with the guy's face where the logo would normally be.
Too cool to be forgotten. Oh, man, I got to have a look for this. All right. And this term being turned into a movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Into a movie. Very short,
not a TV series, a movie. Okay, cool. Yeah. Keep our eyes open for that. All right, cool.
Well, and David, we're coming in exactly on time for the first time in history.
So let's move on.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It's not revenge, it's punishment.
As we said at the top of the show, this week's pick of the week, following on from our look at last week's stealth Marvel reboot, is one of the previous reboots of The Punisher. Garth Ennis and Steve Dillon's The Punisher, Welcome Back, Frank. 12-issue maxi series.
I'm gonna bury the lead here and just jump in and just say, loved it.
Yeah, look, funny as, and I just want to. I was looking through the trade paperback of this, and Garth Ennis summed this up for me perfectly when he said, "Defend the Punisher, justify what Frank Castle does to people, condone the actions of a mass murderer whose body count must run well into the tens of thousands by now." I think not.
No.
Yet I know there are more sensitive times than the 70s when the likes of Dirty Harry, Death Wish, and Big Frank himself were loose on the public psyche. I'm aware we have to be more aware of our consequences to our actions. No one knows better than I do that everything must be viewed in appropriate socio-political context. I can see why Frank's little hobby might be viewed as requiring some kind of justification, but only by morons. So he then goes on basically to say that if you're going to do Punisher, you can't take it seriously.
Absolutely. No, it's absolutely true. I mean, that's the thing. If you're going to do that, I mean, this character is an outrageous character.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it. This is Marvel's little dark child where they basically said, you know, all these lily-livered superheroes running around out there who won't actually hurt people and they take them to police. There's a secret fantasy where you sit there and go, what would happen if they just killed them? You know,
yep.
Just take them out. And that's exactly what the Punisher is. It's their little secret fantasy. And he's been interpreted so many different ways. They've tried to make him really serious. And we even talked about him in the last reboot where we said there's not a shred of humor in it. You know what I mean? And they take it darkly serious. And that's fine. And that works too. But Garth Ennis has got the right idea. Don't try and justify it. Don't try and explain it. It just is. And just go with it. And it's remarkably funny.
Oh, look, it's hilarious. The first panel.
Yeah, I'm just looking at that right now.
Sets the tone where he's pointing this Uzi under this guy's chin and saying, "And get a haircut." First line.
Yeah, because the guy's got one of those little ponytail
things.
What are they called? What am I looking for? Those too cool for school little ponytails. Well, you know,
yeah, little hipster ponytail things.
And a little hipster in his little white suit and his hipster ponytail and all this stuff. And he's just like, "Get a haircut." It's just brilliant. It's just absolutely perfect first panel.
And look, you know, it's like the whole series is basically that Frank Castle, the Punisher, has been away from New York City for, you know, an undisclosed period of time. It's sort of a joke. I think we were talking a few weeks ago that the Punisher is one of the most rebooted series in history.
Yeah. Now, I was going to ask you, because you've probably read a little bit more than this than I have. Do we know where he's been?
No, I just think he's not been in publication for a while.
Because
so
there's
a bit
references
of an in-joke is there as well.
Yeah, because all these references all the way through, it's like, he's back. You know?
Yeah.
It's like
it's really written as a standalone series, this 12-issue series, but it went on and he ended up writing a bit of an ongoing after this. But as a standalone series, this is more or less what the the Thomas Jane Punisher film was based on.
Yeah, and I wasn't aware of that until I was actually reading it and realized that he's living in this apartment building with the strange little characters, you know, and the little mousy woman next door. He's thinking, okay, they made a lot of changes to the Thomas Jane movie, but the concept is there where he's kind of gets to know his neighbors at the same time, you know? And I love Mr. Bupo?
Oh, Mr. Bumpo, yes.
Mr. Bumpo, that's right.
Mr. Bumpo, Dave, sorry, Specker Dave.
Specker Dave, yes.
Specker Dave, and...
and what's her name? And that she's very different, because in the movie, she's played by... She's played by Mystique.
Oh, that's right, yeah, Rebecca Romijn.
Yeah, in the movie. So they've taken her and they took her and said, she's not meek anymore, but she's a waitress, you know?
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
But I love the way... I actually thought it was a child. when she shows up with the biscuit, with the cookies, and she goes, yeah. I made too many cookies. I thought it was like next door neighbor's kid, but she's just this tiny little meek woman.
Now, this is, of course, the Preacher team.
Yes.
And it looks very much and reads very much like a Preacher.
Now, I actually spoke to you as I was reading it, and I said, my first thought was, is this the same artist? And we know it's the same writer. But yeah. Is it the same artist? And you said, yes, of course it is, because there's a character in here who's known as the Holy. He's the priest who's going a bit crazy and doing his own thing. And he actually looks like the Preacher.
I suspect that it was deliberate.
Yeah, I think.
looking at that, I think there's a lot of deliberate references in here. There's a lot of things I think Garth Ennis has just been wanting to do to cut loose on the mainstream Marvel U for a long time.
Yeah,
other character throughout here from the rest of the Marvel U, which is Daredevil.
Which is a great sequence.
Yes.
Because it really, I mean, we'll come back to it when it comes up to that sequence, but let's face it, that sequence just answers puts forth the question that you always wanted to ask to a superhero. Which is how far would you actually go?
Mm.
You know,
and we actually find out how far Daredevil would go.
Absolutely, and the answer is actually a little bit different than I thought it was.
Yeah,
yeah. Now the opening issue, of course, is Frank making his return in stellar form. I love the sequence on the is it the Empire State Building? Yeah, the Empire State Building, where the rich guy basically takes the bimbo up there, saying he takes her up to the spire. And saying, you know, because I'm special, we get to go up here. And, of course, Frank's already up there waiting for him.
Mm.
And we have Frank basically just tossing him off the top of the Empire State Building. Now, the sight gag that follows that, which actually comes up in the next issue,
yes,
is one of the best sight gags ever. Which is the chalk line on the road for this guy who's come off the Empire State Building, which is just brilliant. And as the medical examiner says, we can't shut down the road. You know, it's like he goes, you're polluting my crime scene. And he goes, well, what do you want us to do?
And we should say the crime scene, the person who's been given, who is the one-man Punisher task force, is Detective Soap, who is basically the precinct's stuff-up.
Mm.
And he's initially partnered with a behavioral psychologist. And that partnership suddenly ends.
Yeah, it suddenly ends with our criminal psychologist. Basically, he presents a report to Soap saying, you know, this is, you know, I believe the Punisher is a bit psychotic, basically, is what his report says. And Soap says, we need more than that, yells at him, basically saying, go use your big brain, search through all this stuff. We've got to be able to profile this guy. And the next day finds the criminal psychologist hanging by his tie.
He was a fragile little soul.
He was, and he blames, what I love is the fact that he blames Soap in his suicide letter.
Yeah. And Soap can't take a trick. Even at the ending, when you think he's won, he's not.
No.
Things are still going to go wrong for this guy. Now, during the course of this issue as well, they start introducing some of the other characters.
Yeah.
First of which is the Holy.
Yeah.
And the Holy is a priest who is sick of people coming in and absolving their sins, committing great sins, coming in and expecting them to be absolved. So he does what any rational priest would do and cuts them to death with an axe.
I love the cleaner at the church.
She's great. What was that?
My sight's not what it used to be.
Spilled some red wine, did you, Father?
And he goes, what are you doing here? She goes, I clean on Wednesdays. It's Thursday. What day is it? I'll just get the broom out.
Now, in this chapter as well, and I think this is the sort of segues, we that sort of storyline does segue into chapter 3 of this saga, mm-hmm. which is where Daredevil's introduced.
Yeah.
Now, we did mention that it involved pushing him as far as he can. Now, obviously, the Punisher knows a little bit about Daredevil.
They have history.
What was that?
They have history.
They have history, yeah. So, he... the Punisher's there to assassinate one of the mob bosses. And the Daredevils have turned up and sort of given his speech about, look, I know it seems tempting to do this, you can't do this, but, you know, there are right ways of doing it. We have to bring him before the law. So the Punisher sets off supersonics, crippling Daredevil.
Well, I love the fact that he actually says, I can't beat you in a fight.
Yeah.
He knows that. He knows, so he fights dirty.
He fights dirty. So, you know, the Daredevil wakes up chained to a pole with a gun strapped to his hand. And the Punisher gives him an option. He said, you either have to shoot me or I am going to shoot this guy. So how far are you willing to go? Mm. And he said, you only have one option here because I'm wearing Kevlar all over except for my head. So it has to be a kill shot.
That's right.
And he says, how far you go? So with the words, God forgive me, Daredevil pulls the trigger. But of course, the Punisher has not put a firing pin in the gun.
Which is really cheating.
It is, yeah.
But I love the fact that he actually says to Daredevil, he says, you can leave the killing to me. He goes, yeah. And the chains will be gone when you wake up. And Daredevil's like, what? And he goes, thump.
Yeah. Which more or less brings us to the end of the third chapter. And then we move into the fourth chapter, which is possibly one of the funniest moments in the history of comics.
This is set largely in a zoo. It killed me. This absolutely knocked my socks off.
There's so many little moments in this thing as well. Basically, it starts with the Punisher jumping over a wall, getting shot up to hell.
Yeah.
So he decides to, and Ma, who's the big
You've got to mention the fact that he also says in the early part, he's only armed with a pistol because he didn't expect to be going into combat.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
He was spotted. He was basically he was doing a reconnoiter. He was spotted, and now he's on the run, and he's only got this one pistol. So
exactly.
He has to improvise.
And Ma, who's this, like, you know, older New York woman who's like the big crime boss. She's the boss of bosses. Her and the men have cornered him in the zoo, so he decides that he has to use his environment to survive.
Now, can I also point out that there are a lot of similarities between Mrs. Nucci, or Ma,
yes.
And that older, was it stepmother or whatever it was from Preacher? Jesse's strange stepmother with the stepbrothers.
That's right.
Very strong similarities in character here.
No, absolutely right. And this came afterwards, of course, but... Yeah. I think it was something he did deliberately. Now, the Punisher actually uses several tactics in the zoo, the first of which is piranhas, naturally.
I like the fact he tells the piranhas to hurry up.
Yeah. I haven't got all night. And the colleagues come in to find the guy eaten down to his skeleton. So he then employs the services of a large boa constrictor.
Yeah, what's he say? He says, you're up, big guy. Yeah. But the real laugh.
When he finds himself landed in the polar bear pit.
Yes.
And he finds what he describes as cuddly, lovable, docile. That won't do at all.
He punches the bear. Punches the polar bear. And I love the face on the polar bear.
When you see this post on our website, we will be using that panel.
Oh, that panel is going to be the featured slide.
Absolutely. I've already got it locked in on my site.
I have no doubt. In fact, I'm copying it right now. There we go.
All right. Now, it's... They love this thing, and the three bears roar to life. The Punisher escapes. My favorite moment in this whole issue is when the mob boss's son turns around and goes, it's bears. Yes, with this look of unrestrained glee on his face.
It's like, it's bears.
And the bear takes his head off.
Now, I just got to say that the thought bubble on Frank, though, he's looking over the wall. Ma's about to be eaten by the bears. And he goes, let's just savor the moment. Oh, yes, one of the greats.
Siren's coming, got to go.
Shame. I just It is genius. It is inspired comedy, and it's brutal as hell, but it is inspired comedy. And you just sit there looking at it going, oh my God, I can't believe you even got away with this, you know? Now, we should point out at this point that this was actually released under the Marvel Knights label.
Yes,
so
that's right.
It was a more adult label. It wasn't just on the straight Marvel label. And it's where the Punisher really deserves to be. Whenever they try and bring him into the normal Marvel universe, it's too soft a universe for him.
It's like making the Expendables PG-13.
Exactly. It's like neutering him. You know? So sometimes you just have to... I also love at the end of this issue, another great comic moment, where the holy, the preacher, is digging the graves. Yeah. And he's basically saying, why hast thou forsaken me, O Lord? And the newspaper just goes thwack into his face. Yeah. It's like, show me a sign. And, of course, it's an article about the Punisher.
Sure. And it starts the journey, of course, of the Holy and the other vigilantes that crop up, of basically hero-worshipping the Punisher and hoping to be... that the Punisher will lead them into some sort of vigilante utopia.
Well, what is this? At one point where they all go, you
I
think
really love at the start of the next chapter, even worse things, where we see the fate of Ma. She survived the mauling. She's got no arms and no legs left. And there's just this little detail I love. On the bed is a Get Well Soon card, and it's got a teddy bear on it with a bandage.
But can I just tell you, this image, it was actually this image in this issue, which is where I went, oh, God, this is the Preacher artist.
Yeah.
Because this is like Star in Preacher, you know what I mean? And I just went, oh, my God, now I know exactly what I'm looking at here. And it's so twisted. There's a sequence where she's getting her wig put on. It looks like Darth Vader's chair.
Yes, exactly, yeah. No, there's plenty of visual cues in there. This issue is mainly notable for the introduction of Mr. Payback.
Yes.
Who is basically a corporate crime fighter who wants to bring down the corporations bloodily for their sins against the rest of the world. And also Elite, who is a very dapper gentleman who feels as though that this is a very clean neighborhood and he doesn't want trash interfering in the neighborhood and shoots anybody from drug dealers to urinating dogs who will mess up the very nice neighborhood.
Well, he's in a pristine white suit with a little white mask. It's
yes,
nice.
Sir. He's elite in every way, sir.
Elite in every way. We actually forgot, we introduced a character somewhere along the way and we've forgotten, which is, of course, the cop's partner.
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
Now, we should mention her. I've forgotten what her name is now. Hold on, I'm going to find her name here. She was actually introduced...
Molly is the cop.
Molly, thank you. And I love the fact that there is a breakdown. Now, it's not in this issue. It's actually a little bit further on where Soap basically loses it in the car.
Yeah.
Because he realizes that she's a lesbian.
Yeah.
and he basically loses it saying, I'm going to lose my job. I've got no hope. You know, the guy committed suicide. He goes, and my partner will... And I have no hope of ever sleeping with my partner.
and her response is like, yep, you got that last bit right. And I love her character because she's like, doesn't take any of his guff at all throughout the whole thing. And but also that she's so matter of fact, but also equally as much of an outcast as everyone. And I think that's kind of the theme of this whole book. It's about outcasts.
Yes.
And and that's particularly poignant in the building Frank lives in. There's these three characters who you actually get to know really well, and he says up front at the very first issue, you know, this time it's going to be different. No partners, you know, no little team going. It's just me flying solo.
And yet
it becomes obvious as it goes along that Frank still needs people.
Not only that, he ends up with a family.
He ends up with a family. He ends up with a de facto family. And I love, like, in that issue too, Mr. Bumpo, like, has a heart attack or possibly, which ends up just being another minor stroke.
So he needs
some exercise. So I just thought I'd go down, to Sal's would help me. And he comes back from Sal's, which is a pizza place with five pizzas.
Yeah, exactly. I was saying, he goes right back to his old diet and everything.
How that comes in handy later is also hilarious.
Oh, and Mr. Bumpo, we forgot to mention Mr. Bumpo's first appearance in the comic book in issue one. He says hi to Frank as he walks by and then goes, Frank, could you help me please? It turns out he's stuck in the doorway and Frank just pushes him out.
Just yanks him out. I was going to say, the next couple of issues do follow a definite thread of bloody retribution.
We're also kind of establishing this vigilante mob, basically, because they have to build this up, because basically what you've got is you've got your three individual vigilantes, the Holy, the Elite, and Mr. Payback, and they're all doing their own thing, and they kind of have this epiphany at the same time where they go, the Punisher, you know, he's got to lead us, and we got to become this vigilante team. Which has hilarious consequences in itself. Yeah.
Yes. Well, by issue 7 or chapter 7, his neighbors find out that he is the Punisher because he comes home with 5 bullets in the chest and collapses.
Yeah.
They at first they try to protect him, because by this stage the bad guys have worked out where Frank lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people are sent around. And at this point, Frank starts realizing that maybe I'm dangerous to the people around me and maybe I should go.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though he starts to let them in. Like at the end of one of those issues, his last appearance in issue 7, he finally says to Joan, my name is Frank.
Yeah.
And she just says, yes, Frank. And it's a really nice moment because it's a moment where he's in. Now, that's also this immediately offset with the introduction of the Russian,
who's a great character. And they actually did bring this character into the movie.
They did. They did. And he was used in the movie more or less. And the introduction is very, very, very Garth Ennis.
Yes.
Because you just see it's basically 10 almost identical panels where Bravo Force come in to tie in, which is very much his parody of all the DC wartime stuff,
yeah,
including the very, very terrible Sergeant Rock stuff that's playing at the moment. All the troops go in, and then there's just a whole lot of violence going in, followed by lots of laughter, which we later find out is from the Russian.
Now, I love that last panel, though. If you actually look at that last page, where you're actually inside the house, the Russian gets the telephone and basically says, I'm coming, right?
Yeah.
And he laughs. But there's that panel just before, which actually shows what happened to the force. And one guy's got his head through the wall. Another guy's legs are bent backwards.
It's one guy was left running naked out of the building with a rifle tied around his neck, saying, I want my mummy.
It's so abstract. He's sitting there going, okay, so, all right, what are we introducing into this world?
Yeah, and you haven't seen the Russian at this stage. He's just a giant shadow on the wall, but he's introduced, and he's basically this huge, he's kind of like Popeye on steroids, you know, because he's even got the little sailor tattoo on his arm, and he's got the stripy t-shirt and everything, and but he's this huge muscly guy with a scar across his face and a spider tattoo, who's seemingly invulnerable to pain and is able to crush people. He inadvertently crushes one of Mars' men just by giving him a hug and kills him.
That's right. Now, what is it? He's also a member of which fan club?
Oh, I think it's the Daredevil.
The Daredevil fan club.
He started the Daredevil fan club.
That's all right.
in Russia. He says that he's also a fan of Mighty Thor.
That's
he has so. Big hammer. He seemed like good communist. So, like, you know, he's a ridiculous character. He's introduced now. Meanwhile, the cop partners of Soap and I can't pronounce her last name because I've forgotten it. And I think it's Von Richthofen or something along those lines.
Von Richthofen. That's right.
Von Richthofen. Yeah. Have teamed up and they've realized the Russians there. What they're waiting at this point now is for a bloodbath to ensue, for basically everyone to wipe each other up, then to come in and make the arrest.
Well, that's right, because she's the one-man task force for Ma, and he's the one-man task force for the Punisher. So she's joined forces with him, and the belief is that they will just wipe each other out, and whoever comes out is who they arrest.
Exactly right. Now, we're running out of time, David, so we'll whip through the last few issues.
Yep.
Basically, there's all three of the other vigilantes come up with the idea simultaneously that the Punisher is going to lead them out of this mess. We learn the Russian finally, and then the big climactic scene with the family comes when the Russian turns up. And this goes on for you know, an issue and a half almost, this fight, when the Russian turns up to Frank's place and just starts to belt the hell out of him.
Yeah.
We have in there, just by the way, that wonderful scene you spoke about with with Ma getting her makeup applied, yes, Darth Vader style.
I was just showing Nicholas that picture, actually.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And it ends with her saying to the shivering henchman, "Lick my scabs." He just throws up off screen. Meanwhile, the Punisher is getting the living snot beat out of him.
I love the fact there's that one shot which shows the Punisher kind of regrouping for a minute, and then the back room you can actually hear the Russian going, "Be right with you, big boy," and you hear rips, crunch, doink, splish, and he walks out and just hits him with a toilet.
And it's about this time that Soap has his breakdown and that we spoke about before. Now, the fight continues on for some time. While the vigilantes are slowly getting together, Frank works out that the Russian is vulnerable to hot stuff.
Yeah.
So he ends the fight when he gets thrown into Mr. Bumpo's place, who is eating piping hot pizza, resulting one of the most creative takedowns in all of comics history, which is splatting him on the face with a burning hot pizza,
and then dropping Mr. Bumpo on him.
And then drops Mr. Buffer on him. Had one of my favorite lines in all this, and I've read this a few times now, and it still cracks me up every time. It's just Frank holding Bumpo over the Russian, saying, "How long's it been, Mr. Bumpo?" "About 20 minutes, Mr. Smith." "We'll give it another 10. Okie dokie.
Okie dokie.
And he's just continue to lie there.
Yeah. Just laying there. I like the fact when the Russian gets a pizza on his face and he goes, "Oh, horrible, like thing in Alien." Yeah.
Now, David, we have to wrap this up quickly. So yes. I'll just say that the Punisher wins.
Of course.
He not only takes everyone out. He corners Ma, burns, douses her entire place in gasoline, throws a grenade in. She still somehow manages to get out, launches herself out the window. No arms and legs, mind you.
Yeah, mind you. Yeah.
And starts biting at his ankle. And he just boots her back into the burning building. The big Darth Vader-esque, "No." And then, you know, eventually, and then Soap and Von Richthofen come up tops because they get some compromising pictures of the police chief and the commissioner.
Which is exactly why the police chief put Von Richthofen on the case in the first place. Which is like the ultimate irony of the whole thing, was to stop all that from getting leaked.
Exactly right. And Frank decides that it's time to leave his new family, but he doesn't do so without leaving a bit of money for them to take off. And he says, with the words, "Best I can do, Joan, Dave, Mr. Bumpo, maybe I'm damned, but I'm not dragging you good people down with me," which I think is a really nice way to end that. It doesn't quite end there.
Now, I love this last scene, because what we've had going over the last three issues, basically, is the vigilante force sitting at a table negotiating what they're going to be killing. And they can't decide between them about what they're actually going to be killing. And we finally get to a resolution where they're finally going to do it, and in walks Frank, who's tracked them down. And after basically saying, you know, "This is not what we're all about," and they're basically saying, "You're going to lead us," and he's saying, "What the hell are you talking about?" And finally, the holy shouts up and says, "In heaven's name, man, isn't this exactly what you want?" And we have that fantastic last panel, which is just Frank opening fire on them, saying, "No.
No." Now, look, David, would you recommend this book to other people?
Highly.
Highly recommend it. It's essential Punisher read.
It's essential Punisher read, but I think it's also essential comic book reading.
I think so too.
This is quality comic book reading. This is Ennis at his firing best. This is Ennis when he started Preacher, because I thought Preacher ran out of steam. But when the first, I don't know, 15, 20 issues of Preacher, I thought were as sharp as this. And this is just top-notch stuff.
Yeah.
It's I love the fact that it is self-contained. It has an ending point. And if you could just want to read that and not continue on with anything else, you can. This is the Punisher in a nutshell.
Absolutely. Now, David, we're just about out of time. Mm-hmm. So next week, we will be looking at a brand new self-contained graphic novel called Ratcatcher by none other than Andy Diggle.
Yep.
And this is a brand new Vertigo graphic novel. So we thought we'd just do something that was self-contained, that we didn't have to read, you know, thousands and thousands of issues.
And kind of moving away from superheroes for a bit.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a gritty, hard-boiled one, this one, next week. Yeah. And it's been getting some terrific reviews. So
that's not to say we won't be back to Cape soon, but, you know, we'll just take a step back, look at something else in the cartoon, in the comic book world.
Now, David, where can we find you online?
You can find me at geekactually.com. There's a big follow us button right there. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, everything else just by clicking on that button. And you, Richard?
Same story with me, therealbits.com. That's therealbits.com. You can find me there. All of my links are on there, including my other main outlet, which is Twitter, at dvdbits.com.
Fantastic. Now,
Fantastic, I think you were about to say.
I said fantastic. We can find you there. I think we should also just do a little bit of shameless plugging and say make sure you do look out for a couple of other feeds on iTunes. If you look for Film Actually, you'll find Film Actually, our review show, plus Film Actually News. But I should also point out that I've now restructured it, and it's all up there and ready to go. We now have what's called the Geek Actually Super Feed. And if you want to subscribe to one feed only and get everything, that's the feed to subscribe to. Behind the Panels, Film Actually News, it all goes in there. And it'll also be where all the specials and everything go as well. So the Geek Actually, just search for Geek Actually, you'll find everything on iTunes.
Fantastic. And don't forget, if you want to read ahead, Ratcatcher by Andy Diggle next week. That's your reading assignment.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it.
We will join you back here this time next week.
Absolutely. See you later, Richard.
See you guys.